get started on time. We kind of planned for about an hour and a half here today. We have some presentations and then plenty of time for you to ask questions. In the back, we don't have a lot of them. We'll find more pieces of paper if you need them or pens. We have some tablets in the back in case any of you didn't bring one along, and you can make notes to ask questions so that you get all your questions that we can get answered here today. I'm Lynn Beale. I'm the Executive Director here at the Farm Bureau. Joy Fitzhugh, our Legislative Analyst, is here on the side. I put my cards in the back in case that you want to email us to get any more information or be put on a mailing list. Because it's Farm Bureau, we have made some copies of the stipulated judgment, but our copier is older. It's about 15 years old, and so we didn't make a lot of them. So if you need one, you may share it with your neighbor and come get it. Otherwise, you can email me if you don't have a copy of it, and I'll send it to you over the email. The copier kind of broke down a couple weeks ago, and we'd like to keep it going, so we only made a few of them. This morning, we invited you all here today in order for you as members to get information as you need. About 2 weeks ago, we all got some letters from the county regarding a stipulated judgment and a water management plan that is going before Judge Tangeman on October 14th. Just a little overview here, and then I'm going to step aside and let the other people with information address everything, and then you can ask them questions as we go along. I'm not going to ask you to hold your questions till the end, but if there's a point, and Carolyn and I were talking about it, that you want to ask questions, you can do so then, but let them make their presentations, and then we'll get into the Q&A side of it. The stipulated judgment of the water plan that you have that this is, actually. It's the Los Osos Community Service District that brought it as plaintiff versus four entities, the Golden State Water Company, S&T Mutual Water, the County of San Luis Obispo, and 500 John Does. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just providing just kind of the overview of what we're talking about today. So some of you might have a question about what a stipulated judgment actually is. There are enough officials and attorneys in the room that they can define this a little better than what I have. But typically a stipulation is a fact that is kind of agreed upon by everyone, so that there doesn't have to be a lot of evidence produced in court. And a judgment is the final decision of the court that resolves this dispute and determines the rights and obligations of the parties in the lawsuit. It's a written agreement normally reached between parties in a court case. Once it's signed by a judge, it has the power of a court order or a judgment. You know, typically in a stipulated judgment, as I understand it, if you have buyer's remorse and you try to go back in, you can do that. But, you know, there's a huge process to go through that. Carolyn and I were just talking about the 118 boundary itself, and that might be one of those things that may be possibly moved in the future. Recently, there's been a lot of information about expediting water cases because typically they take many, many years to go through the court system, and a stipulated judgment sometimes expedites that process. However, this process has been going on since 2004, so I don't know if you consider 11 years an expedited process or not. The parties in this litigation, as we said before, this is the plaintiff, and the Los Osos Community Service District initiated this proceeding in February 2004. Some of you are just learning about it now. They also identified, well, they didn't identify, but John Does are named in the case. I believe it's something like 500 John Does. And a John Doe, just to let you know, is a person who is not identified, but they may have business in the case. And I would presume, the lawyers might tell you differently, that if you are here and you got that letter, you are one of the John Does. Tim, is that kind of correct, even though they've not been served and named and consider themselves a John Doe? No.
No, I don't think so. Okay. And this stipulated judgment only applies to the four parties that are involved in it. It specifically does not apply to anyone who's not been named or participated in the lawsuit and deciding not to the judgment. So in this case, there was the option to name other parties who might be interested. There was one in the case for a few years and they were out, the golf course. But other than that, there have been no other parties named in the lawsuit. And this judgment specifically only applies to the parties involved.
Do you have standing if you're a John Doe? Don't.
Well, my question was, it says on page 5 and 6, though, that the judgment and the stipulation are subject to the boundaries of the basin, which is subject to the jurisdiction of the court. So how does the court get jurisdiction of the land in the basin that's owned by the does that weren't named when you haven't served the does that aren't named?
Yeah.
The court won't have jurisdiction over the land in the basin. The court will have jurisdiction over parties who are either joined or who join the lawsuit. The only way the court will have jurisdiction over parties who aren't currently in the lawsuit is if they join or other parties bring them in.
Well, let me read this. The boundary of the basin set forth in the basin plan are hereby established by the stipulated judgment as the boundaries of the land subject to the jurisdiction of the court in this action. Period. The basin is depicted in Exhibit 2, which isn't attached on the PDF website. So that doesn't sound like the land is not under the jurisdiction of the court because it wasn't sued, and the map doesn't have a bunch of spots that are taken out where those parties are. So how can you say that?
Because the stipulated judgment explicitly declines to bring in anyone other than the four parties in other parts that you haven't cited to yet. And it's very clear about that. So it's not that there's any ambiguity about whether or not other parties are going to be controlled by the stipulated judgment in any way. They aren't.
Well, how can you say that when it says right here that they're going to create various pools for purveyors, private domestic, and others, and they were there with an allocation, so they will be growing into this thing.
The pools are not specifically creating water rights for the parties who are using them. The pools are an attempt to allow for the parties who are in the case to reach a stipulated judgment without having to name and bring in all the other parties who are using water in the basin.
It'd be useful. I think you have a presentation on the structure of the basin plan and the stipulated judgment. It may be useful to get to that and sort of start from the beginning.
Yeah, we could revisit. Okay.
Well, it'd be interesting to know who this applies to before you talk about what it is, because it also talks about the committee having the ability to assess taxes, supplemental fees, and address shortfalls of revenue. Does that only apply to the stipulating parties, or are they going to apply the taxes to the land or outside of the stipulating parties that are in the basin but not named as part?
Clearly, the Basin Management Committee, which we believe will end up being a joint powers authority, will need a funding source. And for that, we have identified a special tax that would be imposed upon all the area that's within the basin,
subject to 218.
Yeah, so how do you get from a court judgment and a stipulation to that doesn't include the landowners to a tax that doesn't include the landowners?
Yeah.
That's
no representation.
That we want to understand.
Sure.
You said the 218 is a vote, right?
It will be subject to Proposition 218. What we propose is to create a special zone of benefit within the flood control district, a la Paso Robles. Then have that special zone of benefit assess a special tax and reach an agreement with what is presumably going to be a newly created joint powers authority to administer the funds that are generated by the special tax.
So the stipulating parties will be given the funds from the county generated assessment and then have the ability to make decisions on taxing after that? It sounds like only the county can make a decision on funding and taxes, not the committee.
The Joint Powers Authority, when it's created, will enter into an agreement with the Flood Control and Water Conservation District as to how it will use the proceeds from a special tax to administer itself. Again, it's not to create capital projects at that point. It's not to try to bring in water, try to create water, or do any sort of conservation plan. At that point, all it's doing is organizing itself, trying to create a governance structure, trying to develop a way to implement the basin plan. And then at that point, when there are other projects that need to be resolved, there'll be another Prop 218.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go on. Thank you, Tim. We had talked a little bit about the mapping area. Carolyn Berg has the 118 map, a better map than this. I can make some copies of that too, although again, you don't have color, so there could be a little bit of a problem. I could actually scan it in if you need to. Typically, a stipulated judgment in water cases does establish and prioritize water rights. And Tim might want to, you know, explain that later on. Our guest today, does not include everyone, and so I will ask Carolyn and Tim to introduce anyone else in the audience who is a party to this. Bruce Gibson, our second district supervisor, is here. Tim McNulty, county council, has just been answering questions. San Luis Obispo County. Eric Astuti, next to him, is also county council. Kathy Kibbley with the Los Osos Community Service District. Kathy Verdu, back here. Wade Horton, public works director of San Luis Obispo County, up front. And Carolyn Berg, the water resources division staff engineer of San Luis Obispo County. And I see that Supervisor Lynn Compton is also in the back. Then if you put up your hand. Again, I wanted to tell you a couple of things. We can email you this. If you need to get online, we are not opposed to you using your cell phone if you silence them. And this is the access for our community web. So you can search if you need to or answer emails. So Carolyn Berg up front. If you need me to make copies of the map, I would be happy to.
So hi, I'm Carolyn Berg. I'm with the County of San Luis Obispo, as Lynn mentioned. And I am going to just be walking through a couple of slides to give you a brief background on the new California state law. It's called the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. So I'm going to keep it pretty brief. There are a lot of resources online. The state has a very robust resource center online, and I can point anyone who's interested in that. I can point you to that website. But I wanted to give you a bit of a framework so that you kind of understand the terminology and the intent behind the state law. And then after that, Rob Miller and Rob Saperstein are going to present on the basin. So basically, for those of you who haven't heard of it, there's the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or what I'll be referring to as SGMA for the rest of this presentation. And basically what it is, it's legislation that went into effect on January 1st of this year, and it seeks to put into place local groundwater management. So something that didn't exist before, and basically what the new law does is it provides the ability for local public agencies to come together and form a management entity that then has authority to manage groundwater. And it also provides deadlines for when we're supposed to comply with certain aspects of the law. And if those aren't achieved, then the state also has the opportunity to declare a basin a probationary basin. And that gives the state the opportunity to come in and do planning and implementation on behalf of the basin if basin users don't come together and do what's needed for the state law. So it's basically, it seeks local management, but it provides that the state can be a backstop. So if nothing happens in the basin, they will come in and provide that management. Oftentimes, we get questions on water rights. So I just took a snapshot of the state's website, and I'll just read that for you. It says, water rights are property rights, but their holders do not own the water itself. They possess the right to use it. The exercise of some water rights requires a permit or license from the state board, whose objective is to ensure that the state's waters are put to the best possible use and that the public interest is served. And so this law is looking to ensure that the groundwater is used in a reasonable and beneficial way. And so how that works is basically they define what they consider to be sustainable groundwater management. They're looking to mitigate or fix some of the undesirable results, what they call in the law, throughout all of the basins of the state. And so the five or six different undesirable results that are listed in that law are the chronic lowering of groundwater, the reduction of storage in a water basin, seawater intrusion, degraded water quality over time, land subsidence, or depletion of any interconnected surface waters. So when the state sees those things happening, then they're saying that the basin is no longer being sustainably managed and needs to be brought into a more healthy situation. The state law also says that there can be no uncovered areas. So you have an entire basin. If different agencies get involved in the management and all the different individual users throughout the basin, it needs to make sure that there's no gaps in between the management. So everyone has to be involved, otherwise the state doesn't have that opportunity to come in and enforce the clean groundwater management law. And the last thing is that there are specific exemptions throughout this new law for adjudicated basins. And so again, I can point to anyone who's interested just that that law might be able to read those. Some of the key terms that you'll want to know, there's something called the GSA, that's the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, and it's basically the new management authority over any basin. You have local public agencies that have responsibility for land use, water supply, or water management in a basin, elect to be that new entity, and they have to provide the state with any of their resolution and show that they have stepped up to take on this new management role. And once they do that, they just have to have some sort of legal agreement between them that allows them to take on this new authority of the law. They can do that through a powers agreement, a memorandum agreement, or some other agreement along those lines. And basically, it just describes to the state how that management entity will act. Another term that you'll want to know is the GSP, that's the Groundwater Sustainability Plan. And this is basically the all the basin users and the, that GSA coming together and defining how the basin is going to be sustainably managed. And basically what you're doing is looking at how to balance the demand and the supply of a basin. So it can be done in a lot of different ways. Every basin may handle this differently. You can reduce the demands on a basin, you can increase the supply, but essentially you need to make sure that the supply is meeting the demand so that you're not having those depletions over. So this new state law applies to the high, medium, priority basins of the state. So the Department of Water Resources went through an effort early this year to prioritize the 515 basins throughout the state. 100 plus basins were put into the high and medium priority based on the population that a basin serves, how many public wells are in that area, and a number of other factors. So while we have 22 groundwater basins throughout our county here, only five of them were listed as high, medium, priority basins. And so those are the Paso Basin up here in North County, Cuyama down here, which is shared between Ventura, Kern County, Santa Barbara County, and North County. The Santa Maria Groundwater Basin, which is an adjudicated basin. And then the San Luis Obispo Valley, or Edna Valley, is also one of the listed basins. And then, of course, your San Luis Obispo Groundwater Basin. And it's not to say that there aren't issues with groundwater management or depletions of groundwater in other basins. It's just that the state saw that they maybe had a small population they were serving or a small volume of water or wells within the system. So that's really why these basins have been pulled up as priorities leading to important management sooner rather than later. And all these other low and very low priority basins are still encouraged to move forward with management. So brief highlights of the schedule on the state's deadlines. So the law went into effect on January 1st, as I mentioned, of this year. And on January 1st of 2016, the Department of Water Resources will start to allow agencies within a basin to submit basin boundary revision requests. Like Linda mentioned, there is this opportunity coming up where if we as basin users see the need to refine the state's delineation of our groundwater basin, we can do so, just providing all the necessary documentation and technical support for that change. And so that first opportunity comes on January 1st, and they, I think they'll open up the revision period all the way through March 31st of 2016. And so that'll be the first opportunity to start complying with some of the state's deadlines. The next deadline that the state has for adjudicated basins with final judgments, they will submit any documentation they have to that effect starting on April 1st of 2016, and then we'll give annual reports for from 2017 and on after that. So that's how they would comply. And then, what else do we have here? So the Department of Water Resources is leading a lot of the development of regulations related to this, so kind of providing more detail on the law. And the next regulations they'll be publishing will be for development of that GSP, and those are expected in the middle of next year. And so at that point, then we would have a better understanding of what all the basins would be required to put within any of those planning efforts. And then as far as local agencies' deadlines coming up, besides the basin boundary revisions, there'll be an opportunity from now until June 30th of 2017 for local public agencies to come together and form that GSA. So that's the final deadline to submit that new entity paperwork to the state. And then that group then has the next 3 to 5 years to develop their GSP. For Los Osos, the plans are due on January 31st of 2020. And for some of the other basins like San Luis Valley, theirs will be due on January 31st of 2022. And that just has to do with some designation by the state. And then the other two deadlines I wanted to point out. Oh, one more. So for that GSP, it has to write out how that plan will achieve sustainability within 20 years of being adopted. So by 2020 or 2022, the state, our basins, have to show that they have achieved sustainability and mitigated those undesirable results I talked about earlier. And the last two deadlines I want to talk about are for the more regulatory side of the state law. So the State Water Resources Control Board acts more as the enforcement of this law. And on July 1st of 2017, they'll be establishing their fees and fines. So if a basin is deemed as probationary, the state can come in and do the planning implementation on behalf of the basin, but they will do it using their state enforced fees. So that'll be something to pay attention to as well, just to see what they're coming forward. And then starting after the GSA development and the GSP deadlines, they'll be able to come in and require basin probation. So this isn't just about the local public agencies, of course. The law, while it looks to them to become the new management authorities, it does require that the GSAs consider all the affected basin users. So they list a lot of different types of interested parties that might be involved, like agricultural users, domestic well users, environmental beneficial uses, public water systems, land use entities, and a number of other different players. But the law does speak to how they would be involved in some of the actions taken as well. And the last thing I wanted to speak to is the GSP elements. And so basically, at a high level, without the state's regulations, you can kind of infer what is required in these GSPs. And so basically, the state wants the technical documentation that speaks to the current condition of the basin. What's the geologic and aquifer characteristics? What's the physical setting and current uses? And then it looks to the basin users to define what is sustainability and how will it be achieved. So what's the monitoring plan? What are implementation plans for that basin? And what are some of the 5-year milestones the state expects to have reporting from the GSA? And so you have to define what will it look like in 5-year increments and then report that to the state to see if the basin is actually moving towards sustainability in its coming horizon. And ultimately the plan is supposed to look at how it will mitigate undesirable results. So turning around sea water intrusion, bringing basin levels back up, anything along those lines, I guess. So those 6 things I mentioned earlier. And that's been over the next 10 years. And so for the Los Osos groundwater basin, Rob is going to step into that, but I did just want to point out, I guess it's a little challenging to see here, but if you can see the green on the screen here, that's the DWR's Bulletin 118 boundary delineation. Kind of goes out to Montana de Oro and then back on Los Osos Valley Road. And so that's kind of the extent of it, up to the estuary and then out to Montana de Oro. And then the basin management plan, which I think the later slides will show a little bit better, is right around here. So that first opportunity with some of the SGMA deadlines is that the entities involved here could seek a basin boundary revision to be consistent with that management plan. And then the states have the opportunity to review all the materials and possibly accept that as a new basin boundary. So with that, I can answer a few questions if they're related to SGMA. And if you wanted, otherwise Rob Miller can step into the management plan and we can look at the management plan.
Just a clarification on that last comment I made. So the green area is is that the basin, is what is it, what is established as the Lost Sources Basin today?
So by this, so the Department of Water Resources has the Bulletin 118 boundaries, which is what they consider to be the groundwater basin in the area that needs to comply with the new law. And so that is this green area. But local, the local technical data and the local management plan define the smaller extent here. And so that's the opportunity. But the state has, I guess, the discretion of whether or not all the technical data meets their requirements. And then they can choose to accept this as a new basin.
They can accept the smaller one.
The smaller one. If they feel there's enough information to support that.
And then if they don't accept it, then would the boundary have to be expanded, or would there be a separate plan for the green area outside of the current boundary?
I think this could be done in a number of ways. Like for Santa Maria Valley, they have areas outside of their adjudication, so those might be handled with separate planning efforts. There's different ways of doing it.
Like a memorandum of understanding or some other form.
Yeah, or your management plan, maybe, or your sustainability plan could potentially speak to those areas and how they interact with the management, whether or not there's actually basin pumping going on here at the dunes or not. And so I think there's other ways of handling it.
So the adjudicated boundary, or the boundary for adjudication of that, if UWR does not accept that, then would be the County Flood Control District stepping in to manage the areas outside the adjudication boundary, or is it?
That's a good question. I don't know that. I think that would be a decision point at that time. And we would, I think the state would, once if the basin users choose to put forward that basin boundary request, then the state, I think it's something along the lines of 90 days, they're finalizing the regulations, but whenever we find that out, say like middle of next year, then I think that would be a decision point where we have to figure out if it does say the spring boundary, how do you engage?
So Paul, the county, not the flood control district, but the county itself, is in the default in the event that no other agency steps forward, but of course here you're looking at the possible jurisdiction of a number of other different agencies. Step up and try to become the sustainability agency.
So I'm probably late to this party, but the people who got notices in the community were what? Only the people inside the sub-boundaries, not the whole boundary?
And not even all of them. So what we attempted to do was identify people who, by the county's record, had a well. That was within this proposed boundary of the groundwater basin as we've defined it, not as 118 defines it. So if you had a well, or if you were not within the service area of one of the major water barriers, we tried to get noticed to you.
Why did you not include the people in the entire basin since the water is so usually common?
The stipulated judgment only applies to the bounded area that we heard Mr. Snyder talking about earlier. So it doesn't apply to the whole 118 boundary. And as to people who were served by a purveyor, because their purveyor is a party in the litigation and provides the water primarily to their property, we determined not to provide notice to all of them as well.
And I think there's an important point that maybe Ross should speak to, is that there's not technical data to suggest that the area outside the ISJ's area really has much to do with what happens inside it, and that's the same sort of technical data that would be submitted to DWR to say, look, all this green area, you know, way out here, that doesn't have anything to do with water levels here. In fact, as I understand it, and Rob can correct me, there's a lot of these areas that don't have a lot of water, period, and so. It was just determined that this was the area that made a difference. But it's a hydrogeologic technical issue.
Okay, so I don't understand the geology question. It seems to me that the water in the entire green area that flows down the Los Osos.
And I think Rob can speak a little more knowledgeably to that.
We will come back to that question after the plan.
We are going to get into that in the next.
But the determination was was judged upon by the stipulating parties, and the four stipulating parties agreed that that determination was correct.
The boundary?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we
want
to question in the
back? Yeah. This suit has been going on since, what, 19 or 2004?
Yes.
Okay, so here it is 11 years later, and the water purveyors are being noticed at the 11th hour and 59th minute. Doesn't that present some problems? Not the purveyors, excuse me. The property owners are being noticed at the 11th hour and 59th minute.
You know, Charlie, we have no, I don't want to say this in a way to offend anyone. The way that the stipulated judgment is proposed to be entered does not require the notice of any party. The parties themselves thought that because there was such great interest in this groundwater basin and in this basin management plan, that they should notify people who were not involved and are not subject to the stipulated judgment. And so we came up with the notice as a way to raise attention to it. It is not too late for those people who feel like they need to become involved in the lawsuit to do that. And the county will not oppose the intervention of any landowner or any water pumper over the basin who wants to become involved. It has taken a very long time, much longer than it should have, to get to where we are today. I completely agree with that, and that happened for a number of different reasons. But the notice is a voluntary notice that we came up with so that people wouldn't later say, what on earth did you do? We hadn't heard about this lawsuit at all, and you entered into this stipulated judgment.
If I could try to give some framework to the two sections that are going to come forward, one is the basin plan, the other the stipulated judgment. The idea of managing this groundwater basin as it's laid out in the ISJ understands that the three water purveyors inside mostly the urban area here have figured out a way as to how to bring this basin into balance that does not affect the use of water by those who are not parties, but inside the basin. It's a complicated way of putting it, but let's just say that in broad strokes, there are three water purveyors, there are about 250 or so entities that are inside the purple line, but not in the boundaries of a water purveyor. And the structure of the basin plan says, we have a pretty good idea of how much water those 250 parcels use in sum. And in the efforts to then balance the basin, we don't have to go in and say, you get this much water, you get this much water, you get this much water. The basin, according to the plan and according to the hydrology, and Rob can again talk more to the technical details, sees a way to bring this basin into balance without going in and picking each of these individual entities. Because this is part of an adjudication, what Tim is saying is if any one or all of those 250 entities want to get in and get involved in this adjudication, that's an option, and again, an option that the county won't oppose. Let me just add one asterisk, which may come up if we get down to that level of detail. As I was indicating, the structure of the ISJ is that this doesn't affect the water use of the 250 entities not party to the ISJ at this point. One little caveat is that the basin plan does talk about the installation of meters on wells in that area. That is under consideration as a possibility. The part of Sigma is very likely going to require the installation of meters on virtually any well of significance. So I just want to make sure that wasn't thought to be hidden, but by and large, there's no change contemplated for the water users outside of the parks.
When is the notification? Clearly, you've got a plan, and you're going to assess taxes to fund the plan on all the property owners for the plan that doesn't really apply to the landowners who aren't in the stipulated judgment. When is the county required to notify all the landowners that they're going to have to pay for something that, quote-unquote, doesn't affect them?
if the stipulated judgment is entered, and if the joint powers authority is created, and if the zone of benefit is created, and if a special tax is approved for imposition in the zone of benefit, there will need to be a Prop 218 process that applies to that.
That's when landowner knows that they're going to be affected.
That's when they know they'll have to pay a tax.
And Prop 218 process means a vote.
That's right.
Similar to the one that's been noticed for the
natural basins. Right. We're trying to follow that same pattern.
Bruce, part of this, isn't part of the stipulated plan to be effective? Did you, when we had a conversation, that you were going to pay the purveyors, CSD in particular, and some of the others would come in and ask to put wells in close to some of these private wells? Isn't that part of the plan?
New wells are part of the plan, and I'll let Rob talk about that. Yeah.
Okay, but how can you say that won't affect these people? And in fact, you know, I haven't been at secondhand knowledge to me, but the CSD has proposed coming in and drilling a well that would take as much as 100 to 200 acre feet per year, right adjacent to some of these landowners, which is, you know, 178,000 gallons a day. How can somebody say that's not going to affect them?
Well, yeah, again, I'm going to defer to Rob on that, but that is a voluntary, you know, that's one of the things, as I understand the CSD and the other purveyors are doing, are looking for places where landowners would agree to that.
What if landowners didn't?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let Rob and those who can speak more directly for those technical.
Okay, but that's the hydrology. But would eminent domain be a course of action?
It's not contemplated at this point.
No one's proposing to use that right
at this point.
We have a set of slides on the basin plan itself, which we were just about to run through, and questions about how the basin plan works or doesn't work, and what facilities are associated with that might be better addressed after we can show those.
Yeah. Is there a question for Sigma? Or if you want to.
Well, I was just going on the small acres and stuff where we're at, which is towards the cemetery in that little valley there. You know, we're having to put in new wells, and one of the places they were proposing is putting in some wells there in the area, which we're going to get nailed and hammered really bad if you guys do that there. And for us to put in a well as an individual, it's $20,000 plus. You know, and then you start adding on all these fees and everything that you're talking about, you know. It's like when the sewer came out there, all fine and good, it was moved out that way. But, you know, there's 14,000 people in Los Osos and 250 of us there. Our voice doesn't go anywhere, and we just kind of get slam dunked with this stuff all the time. So it's really a concern to us. You know, my neighbor just had to put in a well down to 200 feet. Mine's at 100. You guys start pumping out of there, I'm looking at a $20,000 well possibly, plus having to pay all the maintenance fees. And if you guys decide to put meters on the well, I'm sure we're going to be paying for those. You know, we're just small individuals here. And I run my business there. I've had a variance to run my flower shop, and I grow my pet flowers and everything on that acre. So it's going to make it extremely tight and difficult.
We can describe the program D that we get out to that part if it becomes necessary as part of the plan. Okay.
I think I'll hand it over to Rob Miller so that we can speak about some of these implementations.
Hi, Rob Miller. I volunteered for this time, so.
So do we.
Yeah. So we're both on the same page there. I do want to be able to speak openly about the technical detail, and I'll try to be as straightforward as I can as you ask questions. What I'm going to do is first I'm going to back up because I don't have a great... I want to talk a little bit about the basin boundary first before I get into the meat of my presentation, just because this slide shows an overlay of the two. The thinking on the basin boundary, which is shown in the purple here, is that you have two things at play. One, you have the watershed, which I think somebody mentioned. That
I'm sorry, I know your name, but who are you?
Oh, Rob Miller, I'm district engineer for the CSD. So the purple shows the basin boundary as we proposed it, and the green reflects more of the watershed that flows into that area. And so the question is, why not use the whole watershed? And I'm just going to give you our thinking, which has been debated for a number of years by the different groundwater experts that have looked at this. The thought is that the sediments that actually produce water outcrop with rock in the areas that are shown in purple here. And on the west side of that, there are water-bearing formations where that, you know, if you drill a well and pump, they can potentially withdraw from a common basin here, a common set of sediments. Whereas if you're east of that, you generally have their own alluvial deposits that are not necessarily hydrologically connected at all to the main basin. So we track the rock as it outcrops. We looked at a bunch of well logs. Cleve Harris, geologist, did a lot of technical work on this, peer-reviewed by a couple of different groundwater experts, and determined that on balance, if we're looking at managing a basin, we want to manage the areas that have potential to be hydrologically connected. So is it perfect? I'm sure I could probably argue it both ways, but it was felt that that was the right area to focus on because it's all connected, whereas the upstream watersheds have their own shallow alluvium to come from. And a lot of those areas don't have water. So I'm going to get into some of the main slides. My presentation is mainly technical. Rob, do you want
to? Yeah, it wasn't just our experts, Rob Saperstein for Global Table One Company. So we use Spencer Harris of Cleveland Harris, the local groundwater hydrologist. Tess Yates also looked at the groundwater model. And DWR posts the Bulletin 118 description of this larger groundwater basin area, had done some follow-up studies that actually confirmed the work that Spencer Harris and our experts did in refining the basin boundaries. So what's a little bit bizarre about the way DWR works is they sometimes do follow-up studies that don't lead back to changes in what's in Bulletin 118. And we're pretty confident that when we come back and show DWR their own studies and our studies, that we'll find consistency in the true groundwater basin boundaries that we're choosing to have this groundwater management plan be imposed on will meet the test for DWR.
What year will that occur? When you
hopefully
see whether
next year
you'll know whether it's
yes. Yeah, by sigma, that's the required time.
So I'll talk about maybe the technical aspects of the plan, and then we'll have Rob come and talk about the legal aspects. Some of you may remember some of this content from the meeting we had at Sea Pines a number of months back. And if you hear repeated information, forgive me. But we are going to talk about more of the legal here today, which I think will be helpful for folks. So the goals of the basin plan, of course, the biggest one is to halt seawater intrusion. And we're looking to not only halt it, we're looking to push it back out to the urban fringe. Provide a sustainable water supply, not only for the urban areas, but also for all the users of the basin, including future users. And then promote water conservation and water efficiency especially, which we've made two significant strides in that vein. This is a 3D schematic of the basin, and I could probably spend a long time on this, so I'm just going to highlight a few elements if you're unfamiliar with the structure of the basin. In essence, we have two major aquifer zones, an upper zone and a lower zone. The upper in the urban area is somewhere around 200 to 300 foot thick, and it gets thinner as you head to the east. The lower zone can go down to 800, 900 feet. It has a couple of different zones within it that are separated by thin clays. But there is a regional thick clay that separates these two major zones. And there is some leakage between them, but there's not a lot of communication. The water quality is very different in those zones. We also have the element of seawater intrusion in our lower aquifer. And if you know much about seawater intrusion, you know that it comes in as a wedge. The deeper the well, the more subject it is to seawater intrusion because of the density of seawater. And so in purple there, you show, we depicted schematically as the seawater wedge coming in. And I'll show you the limits of seawater intrusion here shortly. We also have some areas within the community that have these shallow perched zones of water. You see here reflected in the shallow mound. Those are generally not productive zones, but are within the first 20, 30 feet. Generally have high nitrates because the septic discharge is out there. And then as you get towards the east, the basin becomes thinner and eventually outcrops in rock there at the basin boundary. And then you have Los Osos Creek there, which is a source of recharge to the basin, as well as rainfall over the entire area. Now, the basin has open communication with the ocean, and really is in the shape of a canyon as it comes down through the community, roughly following Los Osos Valley Road. So as you look at some of the slides that speak to the extent of seawater intrusion, the areas that are most impacted are within that canyon. This is a very important slide, one that's been updated for a number of years and will continue to be updated. And it shows some important information. One is in brown. You show what we're calling the basin boundary, that we saw in a previous slide. If you true that up to property boundaries, you see the dashed black line, which we're calling the planned area. And so if you have a property that has the ability to drill a well or benefit from the basin in brown, you're generally in the planned area, which is shown in black. Extent of seawater intrusion in the lower aquifer is shown in the various blue shades tracked over time. Seawater intrusion is not a new thing in Los Osos. There's been evidence of it for a number of decades, which I know is a controversial discussion in and of itself. In 1985, there was evidence out near the Sea Pines Golf Course, you see in the light blue there, and that steadily transitioned inland and accelerated to the point where it is today in 2015, where it's almost reached the Los Osos Library. It's about 1,000 feet shy of that. Some of the things that are worthy of note on this map is the horizon of monitoring the extent of seawater intrusion was about once every 5 years, and that's recently changed. Purveyors came together and said once every 5 years is an adequate level of monitoring, so we'll now spring for monitoring every 6 months. So from here on out, we'll see an update to this map in about a six-month time frame, and we're doing the latest round of monitoring right now. It'll be on the October and April schedule. The speed of seawater intrusion is about 200 feet per year in terms of the advance of the front. And of course, that's exacerbated by the drought condition that we have right now. And we're looking to reverse that seawater intrusion back to its historical limits in 1985, back in the urban fringe. So a very important slide. This basin is complicated in the various jurisdictions that draw water from it. Probably one of the reasons why it took so long to get to where we are. The purple shows the district's water service area, the historical county water service area. Golden State Water Company shown in yellow. Even though their area is large, the amount of water withdrawn by the CSD in Golden State is roughly equal. There's a small Mutual Water Company that serves a few hundred users there on the western side. And then we have a number of private pumpers that have their own domestic wells, residential pumpers that are shown generally in orange, and then you're familiar, of course, with the agricultural areas shown in green. A couple of things that are worthy of note on this slide. Some of the cross-hatching shows some of the areas that have been put into permanent conservation. And we talk about build-out of the community. Many of the areas that historically have been available for development have been put in permanent open space. So the community is poised to grow ultimately from a population of some 15,000 up to perhaps 19. So there's not a large expansion potential in the community, primarily because of those preserved properties. There's a number of community facilities that are shown here, the cemetery, the golf course, community park, ultimately may be candidates for the use of recycled water. Certainly when I talk about the urban core, the schools, the park, and those areas are slated to receive recycled water. But you can see a lot of overlapping jurisdictions, which makes this a little bit complicated. I want to talk a little bit about basin plan programs. These are intended to bring balance back to the basin, to satisfy all the requirements of the Sustainable Groundwater Act, and get us to a point where we can ultimately have a sustainable build-out of the community. The programs, I'll list them very generically. There's a lot of detail in the plan. It takes many hours to get through. There's an executive summary that's worth reading if you're at all interested. Plan's available online. I'm sure if you can't find it, just maybe email in and we'll make sure to share the link. The programs include groundwater monitoring. The one thing that probably most people can agree upon as far as the need to monitor this basin over time. There are areas in the basin that we have gaps where we've tried to either complete monitoring wells in the past and been unsuccessful, or we need new monitoring wells. And so part of that program is to fill those gaps, make sure we are consistently monitoring all the zones within the basin and reporting on that monitoring so the public has a chance to review those reports. Urban water use efficiency, something we've been working diligently on for a number of years, from fixture retrofits to restraints on domestic use, which we have in a number of areas in the community. Urban water use out there has dropped pretty dramatically over the last 20 years. It's been cut approximately in half within the urban area. I can speak for the district's water area, where we have about 50 gallons per person that's being used. You compare that to some of the statewide averages, and we are quite efficient with our water use. Water reinvestment is another way of saying that we're going to manage the recycled water prudently in the community, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And then basin infrastructure, probably what most of you are interested in. Where are the new wells going to go? What are the programs that are going to be put into place to balance the basin? So going into the programs that have the goal of achieving that sustainable yield, there's four programs, and I'll show you a map as to where those are contemplated here in a little bit. Program A is a program we put into place to look at those measures that we're actually either doing right now or have done, or measures that we're looking at funding internally without any special tax. So for the most part, those are already completed. I have a slide on those later. But those are primarily focused on the upper aquifer, the shallow zone in the urban area. Program B is a program that was intended to fully develop the shallow aquifer within the urban area. And that shallow aquifer has nitrate in it at some levels that are over the drinking water standard and would require treatment, which is expensive. So Program B is focused on the upper aquifer and the urban core. Now, Program C looks to shift production to the urban fringe, and I'll show you where that is. But also, it's west of Los Osos Creek. And Program D, which is probably where some of the discussion would focus today, would actually shift production east of the creek where many of the agricultural wells are. I'm going to spend a bit of time on this slide, so bear with me. And this is a slide that speaks to where these programs would actually be installed. And I'll point them. Help through a drop.
Excuse me. So is that those A, B, C, and D, is that multiple choice? Or is that, are you going to be implementing, you know, one of out of those four?
I have a perfect slide for that coming in next.
I mean, is there an amenity above?
Not for any amenity above.
Nothing is not enough.
Let me first help you understand where these things occur. Program A, for those projects that are really essentially done, there's one additional well to be drilled, and they included a blending facility to be able to use upper aquifer water blended with lower aquifer water. Golden State's already implemented that project, is in the ground. The district had a program for drilling an upper aquifer well here in the South Bay area. That well's in, and it has the first nitrate removal facility that's in the community. That was in, it was grant funded, it's in operation. There is a new upper aquifer well contemplated in the center portion of the community near the school. And then there is an intertie that currently exists between Golden State and the district that's been designed and upgraded so we can more efficiently move water between the purveyors, and also there's to be an intertie with a small mutual water company. So Program A projects are either completed or are in the process of being completed, and we're looking at funding those internally without additional taxes.
By
the purveyors. By the purveyors.
So not the county and not the parties who are in quote-unquote affected by
the correct, by the purveyors. The Program B projects, and I'll talk to you about the order and the multiple choice aspects in a second. The Program B projects are shown in schematically in red, and it basically involves the drilling of new upper aquifer wells and the implementation of a large-scale nitrate removal facility. So the technology for nitrate removal is not great. It produces a brine stream that has to be hauled off-site. It's very expensive. There are technologies that are continuously improving in that vein. We're watching those closely, but right now it's expensive to do that. So Program B is in boy, taps the upper aquifer and removes the nitrate.
Will that improve when the sewer plant comes
up?
Slow.
The current estimates are that nitrates will improve over a period of decades, and so maybe 30 years to see a measurable, substantial improvement. It will improve over time and trend down. That's actually a good question. Program C, and this is where I want to be really clear as to where these wells are concentrated. Program C contemplates lower aquifer wells that are west of the creek, but are on the urban fringe. And in general, this green dashed line shows the aerial extent of where those wells are contemplated. Those wells would all be lower aquifer wells, screening the deepest zones, zones D and E. There is already some production that occurs on that urban fringe here with the Golden State well and the District's well, but we would be looking to move further east to produce from those areas. In Los Osos, if you
where is that roughly?
Is there a way to enlarge that?
That's three. Let's see,
what street is the westernmost part of that in
South Bay Boulevard.
South Bay Boulevard.
Yeah, east of that.
I just wanted to make sure.
So this will give you South Bay, and this gives you Los Osos Street. So bound between South Bay Boulevard and Los Osos Street, if that's enough.
I know you all in the back are having difficulty seeing this. Is this correct?
Yes.
In the middle. So we can scoot the table back slightly, and that should enlarge it, but it won't enlarge it too much. You want to try that?
Let's do it.
Okay.
And
very technical.
Who is funding the B and C component of this?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
That's better. That's probably, you just copy the plan of this map and the plan as well. An electronic copy. Program B wells are contemplated to the east of the creek, so that's actually in the agricultural area. You can see the fields underneath.
Can you see it? Want me to put this up on this? Okay.
Appreciate it. So now the slide that I think a number of you are interested in is, which are the programs that are going to be implemented and when? And we'll talk about how they're going to be funded as well. So, four programs, and the programs that we'd like to immediately implement, groundwater monitoring would be a part of any plan that needs to be done as soon as possible. Urban water use efficiency, we've already have that funded in the interim by the wastewater project, but that would be funded as part of the immediate implementation. Urban water reinvestment, which is another way of saying the recycled water portion of the wastewater project, would be funded and is already in place and will be in operation sometime next year. And we're proposing to implement programs A and C. Program A, that $2.8 million, a lot of that has already been spent, 60%, roughly 70%. The remainder of that will be funded through the purveyors. Program C, that $6.5 million, would be to put those wells somewhere between South Bay Boulevard and Los Osos Creek. We don't have full funding yet for that. In the case of the district, we're trying to build it into our rates. But this primarily would be funded through, potentially through the special tax. I think one thing that's important to note is that when you look at, you know, I've been involved in a number of special taxes over the years. In order to implement those, there's a study of how properties benefit from those taxes and what the allocation of that tax will be to various properties. That study has not been done. When it is done, it will be done very publicly, and everyone will have. I can't tell you today what each person's pro rata share of these programs will be that will be funded by the tax. I know that's of high interest, but once the study's done, it will be widely publicized and talked about how that spread is going to go. But program C would be funded through that. There's certainly other ways to fund it, but that's the current direction. Now, that's to get us to balance under current demand scenarios. To get all the way to build out within the community, some level of additional development will be necessary. And that's where we were targeting program B, which is to be, you know, drill wells within the urban areas, shallow wells, and remove the nitrate. That would be primarily to accommodate future development within the community. Also, if all of our groundwater monitoring that we do is showing that we're not fully effective as we implement these programs, then of course we'd have to go for additional programs. So program B would be a future item. We would look to at least have funding authorized for it so it can be implemented if needed. And then in order to provide for full build-out, we'd have to either do programs D or what we're calling agricultural reinvestment, which is to have more widespread use of the recycled water in the ag area. So this is for existing development. This is for future development in general. But you do need to know that this is a living plan, and that if that seawater front is not turning around and retreating and stabilizing, then the measures that we're not proposing to implement immediately would then have to come into play. There may be other measures as well, and there's other things that the plan has looked at that could eventually move up on the list. These are the measures that today we're seeing as being the primary.
So to summarize, the funded plans in the top part there, basically based on the current data, deals with the seawater intrusion halting its progression inland?
Yeah, I better be more clear on that. So groundwater monitoring, partially funded right now. It's being done right now. Everyone's paying their pro rata share. The new monitoring wells that we want to drill, not funded yet. And would need to be funded by special tax or whatever other means. Urban water use efficiency, funded through the wastewater project currently, but there's no urban water efficiency programs that apply to the areas on private domestic wells. So that's it, it's a partial program at this point. But it is funded through the wastewater project. Urban water reinvestment, the recycled water project, funded through the wastewater project, but perhaps unfairly burdening only the sewer area. A lot of the other areas outside the wastewater sewer zone or the prohibition zone are not contributing to that, so the spread of that funding perhaps is not equitable, but that is funded in terms of construction. Program A, mostly implemented, and would be funded through rates and the purveyors. Program C, not funded yet, although the CSD did put money in its rates to fund the well, or its portion of the well if necessary, if other funding mechanisms don't work out. And then programs B and D, not funded, but could be funded through a future tax measure. So I just wanted to be clear on that, Mr. Schneider. A brief list of the things that have been done or are almost done. The interconnection improvements between the CSD and Golden State, funded and designed. I'm not sure if we'll get it done by the end of this year, but perhaps first quarter next year. Upper Aquifer Well near the school, near the Baywood School. We have an adopted environmental document. We're walking through the county's process. One of the things you do need to know about in Los Sosos, we're in the coastal zone there. So if a new well is proposed, it requires a coastal development permit. So there is a very public process to drilling even one new well. So if you're concerned about, hey, this new well is going to go in near my property and I'm never going to know about it, in addition to the basin plan notice, there will be notice to all the properties around these wells as they walk through the coastal development permit process. Maybe that provides some comfort. I don't know. The South Bay Nitrate Removal Project, that's been completed. It's grant funded. The Palisades well modifications, that's done. And then the blending project that I showed you on the map, that's completed. We had one of our purveyors that was not metered in terms of the individual users. That was controversial over time. Sorry, Bill, I won't pick on you. But that's been done, and they're currently being metered and billed based on use. And of course, their water demand is well way down because of it. That's the conclusion of the technically minded slides. And maybe I'll look to Lynn or to Rob to see if we want to take Q&A now. I want to make sure we have time for the legal at the end. I said firsthand.
Hey, Rob, thanks. I have a couple questions for you. It appears to me that programs A and C are the highest priority programs. And it looks like their total cost for those is about $10 million between Golden State and the LOCSD. Why couldn't we cover that with simple water rate increases, that amount of money? That's the first question.
Rates are always one way to fund projects. In the case of Golden State, they have a three-year rate cycle, and the Public Utilities Commission looking over their shoulder. So there's an uncertain timeline and future to those funding streams when it comes to Golden State. We have a little bit more control in the district and from S&T. We're subject to Prop 218. We've already built in our rates, particularly when we get out of this drought situation, sufficient funding to fund at least one well. So that's a compound answer to your question.
Secondly, can you talk a little bit about the study that's ongoing right now with respect to the seasonal release of free devil in the creek?
Yeah.
And maybe look at your cross section of the basin and point that out.
Yeah, let me see. Just briefly, one of the projects that we're looking at as a possible project, a future project. I don't have a good cross section here for you. Are you talking about the 3D reader?
Yeah.
When you say cross-section, I think something...
It's closest. Yeah.
That's as close as you can get. It would basically involve looking at the feasibility of putting recycled water in Los Osos Creek seasonally, just during the summer, to recharge the lower aquifer that's in communication with the creek south of Los Osos Valley Road. So that's being looked at as a potential project. I saw some other questions here.
Can you talk a little bit more about how the seawater intrusion would be rolled back?
Yeah. So seawater intrusion responds to water levels, in bottom line. In order for seawater intrusion to be rolled back, you have to achieve water levels that are above, not just at sea level or a little bit above, but sufficiently above because of the density of seawater, and the lower density of fresh water would be significantly above to push it out. And so we're looking to take the areas on the western side of the community and raise water levels in the lower aquifer.
How much is roughly?
In some areas, 20 feet. We have actually a metric that we're going to be trending over time, which is a water level metric. And if our measures are, if they're working, that one should change pretty fast. So some of these things take decades to improve. That's not one of them. We should see recovery of water levels on the west side within a few years of implementing these projects. So the proof will be in the pudding.
How much higher than the sea level does the water table need to be to start to make progress?
10 to 15 feet,
okay,
in round numbers on average. Probably live with, on the shallower zones, you need less. On the deeper zones, you need more.
They have water table levels.
So where does the water come from? The chargers have higher water levels.
So the source of recharge to the lower aquifer was extensively studied in the 2000s. There's really two major sources. One is the creek, which there's actually the low aquifer comes right into the creek. So as the creek flows, it directly recharges that zone. Also, in looking at water quality and water levels, it's believed that a substantial portion of the shallow aquifer leaks down slowly into the lower aquifer through the clay, and there's reams of study that have been produced on that. If you're interested, I can give that to you. But that's those are the two major sources.
Are you really talking about the source being surface waters that are retained and re-injected? Is that
the source of recharge today is surface water that's fallen in the urban area and water in the creek are the two major sources.
So you're going to decrease the amount of runoff that reaches the bay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Roterson.
That's an upper aquifer recharge source.
Which has a leak to the
water. Yeah, good. Thank you. Good. I'll mention that too. So one of the places to reinvest the wastewater is here in the urban portion of the community. And that's recharging the upper aquifer. And as Supervisor Gibson mentioned, a fraction of that will get to the lower aquifer. We think between a fifth and a fourth of that. But I think it is an important distinction. There are actually in the plan some water balance diagrams that show where the water goes now and where it goes in the future, how much stream flow, how much goes out to the bay. But in essence, we're looking to capture some of that water that's currently flowing out to the bay. I think that's a good...
And how would that water be captured?
Strategic positioning of wells. That's how it would be captured. Oh, and strategic positioning...
All right.
Strategic positioning of wells and recharge. So putting the wastewater, the treated tertiary water in the right spot and drilling the wells in the right spot.
I have a question on water flow in the creek. There basically is no water flow in the creek because the creek is now so overgrown. How do you expect there to be water flow in that creek?
The last time there was significant standard rainfall in the community was 2010. And we did at that time a creek flow study where we actually looked at the rate of recharge in the creek, and our hydrologists walked the creek with this flow meter to determine where the water was going in and where it wasn't. So we had good sustained stream flow in Los Osos Creek all the way through the bay in 2010. Obviously, we've had below average rainfall since then.
Not like it used to be before the creek was left overgrown,
as it is. There used to be a lot of water. As of 2010, we still had, like, the study showed that 10 cubic foot per second was percolating into those zones in the creek. And those areas still drained in the creek.
So the little creeks are endangered species.
Yeah. Little creeks were planted by someone else. They're not these.
So you're saying that the vegetation is robbing water from the creek.
It's impeding the water flow.
Yeah, there's not been a lot of discussion on that. Yeah.
Well, there absolutely should be.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Because my family's own property, I've known there for a long time, and I know what it used to look like.
Yeah, that's not really been in the public discourse much. So
and so does the willow trees, of course, suck out water. So you've got a water loss there, but they also slow the water flow down, which might increase recharge. Which is the better way to go? Get rid of the willows?
Or... I don't know. That's not been looked at in detail. A couple more questions, more hands. So, Mr. Saberstein, I'd like to invite you up.
Do you want me to do this again?
Yeah.
And we've been going an hour. You want to take 2 minutes, or you want to hear me collaborate?
I think they're interested in you going ahead.
And tell, I learned long ago in the media, I don't press buttons that I don't know what.
This one goes forward. Thank you.
So I got nominated to talk about stipulated judgment. And I'm going to, before I go through the slides, I'm going to even step back a little bit further and give you my cut on why it is we're here probably far later than we should be, but here we are, and we think we have a plan. We think we have a plan with some integrity. From my perspective in dealing with groundwater management throughout the state for my professional career, or whatever it's been, a couple decades or more, in multiple groundwater basins, there is no question that Los Osos Basin is a basin in stress. And so that means it needs to be managed. And fortunately, unfortunately, we now have sort of a double whammy of water purveyors whose water supplies were in jeopardy before we started some of this process and have done a good deal in demand reduction and already developing some programs that will help if not reverse, at least stop the progression of the stress on the basin. But the double whammy is we now have the state coming and telling us, and that was the purpose of talking about SGMA at the beginning of this. If we don't do this as a community collective in this fashion through the stipulated judgment, we will do it through SGMA. And we'll be largely the same entities. There will be community involvement one way or another. The little footnote is folks were talking and expressing, understandably, some concern why it seems late. Where are we getting, seemingly getting involved way late in the process? One of the things we consciously chose, and will be part of the slide here, but I want to maybe mention some of these things a few times. The Basin Management Committee will be a Brown Act committee, so everything we do will be agendized, publicly noticed. There will be opportunity for the public to be involved in the same way they're involved at the Board of Supervisors meetings, LLCSB meetings. We purposely chose to do that knowing this community and what this community expects in from its public officials and public water suppliers in Google.
Which branch of the government would that be under? Judicial branch? Administrative branch?
So the Brown Act applies to public entities, and the Basin Management Committee will subject itself to the government code provisions, statutory provisions.
Yeah. But my question is, it's going to subject itself to the code, but what branch of the government is the Basin Committee?
If initially it will be an arm of the court, unless and until there's a joint powers authority created, and then that will be a public entity. Every joint powers agency in the state of California formed under the Government Act, Government Code, is a special district. So it is an administrative agency.
SGMA doesn't require the formation of a JPA or the formation of a special district or a special tax, does it?
It does not require any of those things. It requires the production of an implementation of a plan that creates a sustainable groundwater management plan to achieve
the... We have a plan. All that's lacking is implementation.
Correct.
So why do we need the bureaucracy and the governance structure and the JPA, special tax, 218 process? Why is that necessary?
To implement the plan.
Well, we saw the programs A and C were barely $10 million. That's not a lot of money in this kind of a endeavor. Why do we have to go to this big, overblown process to raise a few bucks? I don't quite get that.
I'm not sure what the overblown process is, and $10 million in my world is a lot of money.
Not in the water world, no, sir.
We can have a difference of opinion on that.
So.
The why we need it is... By March of next year, we need to submit to DWR, if we so choose, modifications to the basin.
We have that data. It's available.
Yeah. Give me a chance to answer your questions, and we may in the end have a difference of opinion of why what we do and what we chose to do is necessary. We have maybe safe energy. We have milestones we need to achieve, and somebody needs to be responsible for that. Just to say that the general community at large is going to do that is chaotic, in my mind. It's not been done yet. And so perhaps maybe now is the time to step through the process that we've elected to be the public water purveyors, and the county's got responsibility for them. Primarily the recycled water management plan, recycled water reuse, and helping with the funding of the overall program. So, purveyors in the county get together and have gotten together over a decade now. And there's been lots of curves in the road between issues with Los Osos, issues with implementing this re-sewering of the community. Finally got to the real issue, how do we restore some integrity in the water resources in this basin? And the tools are really very few. You either impose demand reduction on some or all of the folks that are using the water resources, you develop supply sources, or you implement some form of management or some combination of the three. The two, it's not rocket science.
You were saying we've got about, or someone else was saying we have about an increase maximum of 4,000 new people moving in. Is there a way to put a halt to any building and any more influx of demand through increased population?
Is there a way to do the simple answer is of course. And the land use authority is held by, in the unincorporated areas, held by the county. And those are planning decisions that are outside the water management entity's purview. Certainly within, that's what community is there for, is to give the land use decision makers feedback over what happens in their community. The water purveyors don't control the general plan, don't control the specific plan. For
has that ever been addressed in the county? As far as I remember, the state years ago saying our area has to take, not our area, but San Francisco County, had to take in 15,000 new dwellings.
Yeah.
And even then we were having a problem with water.
So I have to do a dodge and I'll tell you why it is that, because you know, I'm standing up here as a water purveyor representative. We, fortunately, unfortunately, we don't make land use decisions.
Right.
We have to respond to them, just like the community does. And I just urge all the community members to make sure that you, if there's any community I'm aware of in San Francisco County that is not bashful, it's Los Osos, and in the community making their voices heard, you've got to do it. You've got to do that with your decision.
So basically, though, the plan, E and D, I think it is, to support future growth, the existing community services district and Golden State Water Company, the county could allocate the cost of providing the additional infrastructure to increase the yield of the basin on that new development as opposed to taxing back on the existing customers.
So I'll just say generically, there's more than one option on how to allocate the cost of accommodating new growth. Rob Miller was very careful to say that it may be necessary to implement some or all portions of those additional future aspects of our basin plan just to restore the basin. So keep in mind
that it is possible.
Yes. So are there multiple choices, options in methods of funding those portions of the basin plan, particularly if they're geared toward helping support future demand? Yes, that's a true story. So again, getting back to, so purveyors look at one another and say, heck, we've got a problem. Our responsibility is to ensure we provide a reliable, long-term water supply to our customers. Otherwise, we're not doing our job. And the first thing we all did was say, how do we get there as quickly as possible? And the quickest way, unfortunately, the most painful, but easiest way is demand reduction. And Rob mentioned, the purveyors are now all three entities, all of the three, I include S&P, although not truly a public water supplier, they're supporting a small community. We have all met the 50 gallon per capita per day indoor water use, which is extraordinary. I don't think you'll find almost any other community in the state absent because they're trucking in water, hitting that level of indoor water use demand. So check, smart, we did it, we're there. Does it mean we'll stop? Absolutely not. Are there further conservation measures that we want to impose on our customers, on the future customers? Absolutely. That is an integral part of the stipulated judgment, is to achieve that objective. We're already there, even before the stipulated judgment is entered. The other is outdoor water use, a little bit more difficult to manage, but we're doing it, and the governor is telling us we're having to do it. Then we ask ourselves the question, do we need to bring all of the other groundwater users in this basin into the fold? And I apologize that you're very interactive, and I don't know your name.
My name is Jeff Edwards.
Jeff, And that one, it took the same nanosecond it took you to say you don't, for us to say, why in the world would we do that? There is no reason that we should broaden this litigation. It is litigation. Broaden this litigation and impose costs on, heartache on, business interruption on the private groundwater users, and I use that word broadly, the small property owners, the individual well owners, the small businesses, commercial agriculture. There is no reason to include them in this adjudication if we can avoid it. We unanimously came to that conclusion that unless there is, and it's part of the reason we held prior meetings with the Resource Conservation District and this meeting, we're trying to get people knowledgeable about the intent of this. We can't say no. We wouldn't say no. We wouldn't expect the judge to say no if after the end of this meeting or you go consult with whomever you choose to consult with and you're a private landowner and has a well or thinks you want to build a well, and finish the thought and then get your question. Your intervention in the lawsuit will not be opposed. Will it complicate things? Absolutely. And so yet another tenet in our response to why would we do that is that will just slow us down to implementing this basin plan. And that would really be unfortunate for this community. Yes, sir.
My one comment is, and I'm sorry Bruce isn't here to hear, is thanks for telling us and not asking us beforehand. And I think that was a huge error.
And I would be the first to admit to you, I was listening to the questions and the both the interest and the simmering anxiety. If there's anything that I would apologize for and tell you was disrespectful but difficult to figure out how to do is, how do we go and ask folks, do you want to be included? So, do you want to be included in a lawsuit? It was in, and so we were late, perhaps, and I acknowledge to you, disrespectful, but it's not, the choke point is not over, and it's not even over, even if the stipulated judgment is entered. As you can see, and John's questions have been great at getting at this, this is really just the start of the process. It's nowhere near the end of the process, so at any point in time, this is really granular in this stipulation, and you can say what you said again now that Bruce is back in the room. At any point in time, there is the ability for any property, whether they own well or not, to intervene in this lawsuit and be included in the process, in the litigation process. Why you do that, I question it, but we Golden State would not object to it. The county's already said they would object to it. I don't believe S&T or CSU would object to it. We don't believe that it is necessary, and I'll say it in a different way. Who cares what my background is? I represent both public entities, large agricultural businesses, small agricultural businesses, small groundwater well owners, and the first thing that comes to my mind is business transaction costs. Now, what does it mean to your business to opt into a lawsuit? And so perhaps was it disrespectful for us to make that decision for the community of well owners at large to make the decision? We don't want to include them in the lawsuit if we can avoid it without asking. I'd be the first to admit.
Well, the answer is very simple to why would anyone want to enter into litigation, thousands of millions of dollars, and it's three words: lack of trust.
And I can't trust me. excuse me, but so you want to kick me in the ass and send me out the door? The best we can do is try and do this, have our meeting subject to the Brown Act, keep this dialogue going in as frequently and in whatever form is necessary to keep folks informed, and then you make your choice. And the choice it's dynamic. So as the implementation of the basin plan will be a feedback loop from the hydrologic scientific standpoint, There'll be a feedback loop from a financial standpoint. There'll be a feedback loop from a water rights sensibility. Have we done enough to protect? So again, I'll say the last piece in a different way, and so and I apologize, and I'll get back to the slides. The last piece of what was sort of our main tenet among the purveyors was, can we develop a plan that the purveyors can responsibly implement without impacting the water rights? And I understand there's, I say that in the legal sense of not controlling, not attempting in any way to control private landowners' access to or use of water for any beneficial purpose. I'll asterisk the woman in the back's concern over, might there be drawdown in our wells? Might it cost some individual a little bit more money to pump water? That's a different issue than saying to you, we are requiring you to reduce your use by 10%. We didn't want to. We don't intend to. It would take an extraordinary, catastrophic decision-making error in this for us to have to come back to that landowner community, both dormant well owners and existing users, for the purveyors to believe that they have to come back and say, we need to go to the community and ask for help because the basin is still, pardon my language, going to shit after we've already tried to implement some of these major programs.
But you are planning to tax everybody.
So I've been very careful.
And with a particular representation of that tax, which isn't a, like a one-man, one-vote,
and
as your organization with a 38% vote as a private entity.
Let me say that a little bit differently. The Basin Management Committee decision making is exactly as you described, John, that it gives Golden State, CSD, S&T in the county proportional decision making that's not equal. But the Basin Management Committee alone cannot impose any financial burden on the public without it, the special assessment, engineering studies, and a vote. It's not a vote weighted on what Golden State.
Well, but could you please explain to me why in this document here it talks about specifically the voting when the board, whatever you want to call it, the district that it is, it has a majority vote on creating an assessment. How can it have a vote on an assessment if it cannot create an assessment or a tax?
So the stair steps are, the Basin Management Committee, which may or may not be a joint powers authority, that still is in the works of what form it will take. All the Basin Management Committee can do is recommend to either the flood control district or the county, please start the process to impose a special assessment or a tax on the properties. The Basin Management Committee cannot unilaterally do that without following Prop 218.
But the word here is not recommend. I'm on page 30. This is the rules on the voting, and it says basically you have to have a majority. Adoption of any supplemental fees, taxes, or assessments necessary to address shortfalls or unanticipated expenses for which reserves are unavailable. So my question is, how can the Basin Committee be voting on adoption of a tax if they have no ability to have a tax?
Yeah, it's a little bit of apples and oranges. So the Basin Management Committee, to the extent it is self-funding, so for water purveyors through its customer rates, the county through the flood control district funds that it's currently using to fund these activities, there is no special tax that's funding these activities today. If that language is intended to require unanimous approval among the Basin Management Committee to self-impose any future funding obligations on itself, and there is no way that that committee can unilaterally go and impose a property tax or any assessment on any property on anybody that is not subject to the adjudication without going through the Prop 218 process.
What about the adoption of regulations or restrictions on purveyor delivery of water.
That's all the purveyor delivery of water.
That's so the committee can tell one purveyor what to do?
The way we set it up is the committee adopts regulations for all the purveyors, and the purveyors march hand in hand. So, for example, if we said, look, 50 gallon per capita per day is not cutting it, we've got to go to 40 gallon per capita per day. We would do that with unanimous approval, and we would all do that together. The only asterisk I put on that is Golden State, as a PUC-regulated utility, has to go to the PUC for approval for that, unless and until the PUC approves the stipulation, which is the next part of the process. We're getting really grand.
Because it's a question of, I mean, what if you're talking about a tax, the question is really who, what's your representation of the tax? I mean, that's really not here.
Yep.
So I'm confused about that. You have the committee, it has one representative from the district. Mm-hmm. I don't think you legally, as a joint powers agreement, can decide what the entity is going to do before it does it. You can decide that you want to have your representative to the community services district go to the board and then have a board vote, but you can't dictate what the board is going to vote.
That's true.
So how is the quote adoption? How can you adopt something when in reality you can only ask that it be adopted?
And functionally, every entity will know what is coming up for discussion at the Basin Management Committee. And if that the board of the CSD is not given authorization for the CSD board representative to vote on that, they vote no and it doesn't happen. But you'll see that we were very careful at requiring any financial expenditure requiring unanimous approval among the Basin Management.
Those would have to be pre-approved. Any action would actually have to be pre-approved by the CSD before his member
voted. Or go back to the board. Or the member votes no until I get approval from the board. If it's an issue that comes up that the CSD board has not yet addressed, then they vote no. And we don't have unanimous approval and it doesn't get approved at the base of management.
Excuse me, I have a question about the procedural
issues.
And there's been discussion that intervention won't be opposed by property owners. Would be an extension of the court's consideration of a stipulation be something they would oppose? I know that the court date's coming soon for the court to review the stipulation.
Yes.
Would the parties that are already in lawsuit oppose a continuance of that?
We've not talked about that, so I can't speak for anybody other than the Golden State.
What about the county?
The county hasn't talked about it either. But you know, I think we need to know who and what if it was property owners who were interested in the extension, we would definitely talk to them about that.
And all I tell you is I'm not the decision maker for my client. I just give them advice. I'd say, boy, this has been a long road, and we really need a good reason to postpone getting before Judge Tangerman. We intend to put on similar, perhaps shorter testimony than what you're hearing here today to educate Judge Tangerman about the details of the plan. We really want to get on board. We don't believe we're doing a service to the community by slowing the state.
And when is it supposed to be heard?
Week from today?
Yeah.
Week from tomorrow, excuse me.
I don't think Tangerman's in town that week. It's
on his court calendar.
Are the landowners entitled to get a copy of all of the pleading paperwork and the procedural documents that are in the current litigation?
Yeah, so,
how it might affect them before the hearing? Where do they get those?
The only thing that you don't have that is really nothing more than the summary. The stipulation is not going to change. It's what's already.
I'm talking about the whole history of the legal
document. Oh, that's been going on for 12 years. You'd have to go to the court.
But to know as a landowner how that litigation affects you, you can't really do that unless you have the whole body of the document.
Let me ask, Mr. Snyder, are you a landowner or an agent of a landowner?
That's irrelevant.
I'm in the county.
It's irrelevant.
I would ask.
Actually, he's a member of the public and he has a right to speak.
Come on. Just a second. This is bullshit. All I've noticed is that there are hands up who people who might be landowners who are directly affected. I was going to ask your indulgence in yielding the floor a bit so that we can get all everybody's questions.
Well, let me answer the question of who I am. I'm John Snyder. I'm from Napomo. I've been in the groundwater litigation in Tacoma. I've been on the opposite side of this island in New York for a considerable amount of time. And I'm very concerned about water rights in the county. And I'd be happy to yield to everybody behind me. Just speak louder than I am. I'm trying to avoid talking over
you. Yeah, he's really good.
I think I can quickly answer the question, gentlemen, and if not, we can talk some more after. The court records are public records, so anybody can go access the court records. And San Luis Obispo, unfortunately, a little funky in that not everything's available electronically like we've got experience in Santa Clara County. Everything that's filed, though, with the court is public. But you'll see a giant-sized gap between the original filing of the lawsuit and then we filed what's called an interlocutory stipulated judgment. It means we put the litigation on ice so that we could have settlement discussions that took far too long. And then you see this giant-sized gap, and then the only thing you'll see that happened in the middle-ish of last year was a request to reactivate the litigation, get it assigned to a judge again, so that because we believe we were very close to settling. And so the only new documents that, other than a case management statement that says we're having productive settlement discussions, the only things that will be filed in advance of, and hopefully they're either going to be filed today or tomorrow, in advance of the court hearing next week, the stipulated judgment, which you already have copies of, the basin management plan, which has been out for months, the notice to landowners that most of you received because you're here. And then there will be a cover filing that's 3 or 4 pages long that just summarizes those documents. That's the only thing that only a few folks in this room have seen, but there's nothing new in there. It just summarizes the stipulation so the judge can see in a shorter document and consume it. And it says that we will have Rob Miller and Spencer Harris available to provide live testimony in case the judge wants to hear more detail.
I'm going to ask a question.
Yes, please.
Basin management plan versus what the county was speaking about are two totally different things, right? That's happening in the future, right? We have this new plan, GSA. And GSP. I'm just asking this question because what I hear is like it's very much talking about the same water.
Yes.
So the reason that we're all here is because we care about who is going to sit on this GSA agency, right? Because that is not necessarily the people in the lawsuit. Brand new. Yes, I know.
Terrific question. There is one of the things that wasn't mentioned earlier is written in SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act that we talked about at the beginning of the meeting, is an exemption for the Los Osos Basin, but it says provided there's a final judgment in the Los Osos Basin.
Right.
And my belief is that the stipulated judgment, if approved, satisfies the requirements of SGMA.
So that's why we're here, right?
Well, no, why we're here is let's fix the basin. That's really one.
Right.
Whether it's through SGMA or through the judgment or some combination of the two. There is, I'm not quite sure how big a disagreement between the county and at least Golden State Water Company whether the stipulated judgment satisfies the requirements of SGMA if the court approves the stipulated judgment. And then there are the fringe areas that we hope to reconcile. Those are, in the scheme of things, not terribly important because
saying that this stipulated judgment that's been going on for 12 years is likely could be okay for the state, and then all the people that weren't involved in the stipulated judgment now just have to deal with it.
And
very new, but I'm not.
Yeah, no, it's great. Oh, great questions. And I'll tell you that from my perspective, as a public water supply representative, what you would get in Sigma is no different, other than maybe in form and in jargon, than what you'll get in this stipulated judgment, with the same public water supplier entities taking the majority of the responsibility to implement the plan, holding public meetings, having as much interaction as the community wants, and it may be more interaction than you'd ever want,
right,
about what we're doing to implement a plan to restore this basin. Sigma requires us to get there. The stipulated judgment is, in my view, the most expedient and appropriate vehicle to get us to the same place. If you wanted to table the stipulated judgment and allow the Sigma process to go forward, we'll lose 2 years at a minimum, and we'll end up back in likely at the same place with the basin more distressed.
Thank you.
In order to move the meeting forward, let me do two things here. We had planned on being here until 11:30. We are here for the rest of the day. My next meeting is not until 4:30. I want to find out how many more slides you have. Are there other presentations? Sorry, I'm managing this.
Yeah. Hold off your question. I've been doing a little bit of ad lib, and I'm probably...
You're off your spot.
Probably in 2 minutes could deal with whatever I
guess. Okay. If you would go through your slides, sure. We'll hold our questions, and then you're welcome to stay as long as you need to. But go ahead.
Yeah.
Go through the next two. Are there any other presentations? County?
All right.
Go ahead, and then we'll hold our questions
until
the end of the slide.
Okay. So, already talked about procedural history, hydrology of the basin, the discrepancy between Bulletin 118 and the plan and the stipulated judgment. We just started to hint at the potential conflict between Sigma and the stipulated judgment. The only thing that I would tell you about waterways that I think you want to hear from me is what we, try to do, I'll say it in slightly different words that gets to the language used in the stipulation. What we try to do is, number one, use the best science available. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. The best science available to determine what the safe yield of the basin is and should be for the foreseeable future given the cultural dynamics in the basin. If we started growing rice in the basin, if we started growing high rises in the basin, might that analysis change? Yes. Do we expect those things to occur? No. So, and then we divided based on our best estimates, because we don't have meters of what people are using water for other than the public water providers, we divided, parts that safe yield into allocated pools. Purveyor pool, agricultural pool, community pool, private domestic pool. I think they speak for themselves. We use the best available data and science to derive us. Are they perfect? No. Are they close? We believe they're pretty darn close. That without meters, you can get a pretty good sense of what people are doing, by the crops they're growing, by other uses of it. And I'm going to try to look through this before I answer your question. And then we said, the only allocation we will touch in the stipulation is the purveyor pool. We will not touch the water allocated to the other three pools. And within 2, 3, 4%, are they pretty darn good? We believe they're pretty darn good. The stipulation only has control over what the surveyors do, and only will have an effect on their use of the purveyor pool slice of water.
Quick question regarding,
yes.
It doesn't in any way prescribe the purveyors to the future time coming back with a prescriptive claim against the overliers?
Does it prohibit a future prescriptive right claim? No.
But it doesn't solidify your position to make the future.
And we were very careful in the stipulated judgment to make clear that rather than quantifying our rights and trying to characterize them as prescriptive rights or appropriative rights or any sort of right, we said our goal is 50 gallons per capita per day, minimize outdoor water use, implement the basin plan. We tried as best we could to sidestep any potential conflict over competing claims to water rights. And part of the discussion was, if we did that, that means we have to bring in all the landowners, because that's the only way to get certainty. And why would we do that? Waste what could be, John and I have been in Santa Maria, we've got two appeals going on a case that's been sitting, bouncing back between Superior Court and Appellate Court for 20 years. In fact, this community cannot sustain its water supply with that level of conflict. We didn't want it, and the stipulated judgment does not go there.
Paul, I should just make sure that we're not deceiving anyone here. There are facts in the stipulated judgment that lay out the facts that would be necessary to acquire a prescriptive claim of water rights for these purveyors, and those are part of what's being stipulated to. There's no doubt about that. The prescriptive rights aren't being explicitly created by virtue of the judgment, but the facts that it lays out would lead to that conclusion. So,
and those facts exist irrespective. How many studies have said there was a seawater intrusion problem that's worsened in the basin? How many studies and DWR designated the basin as a high priority basin? We know the basin is in stress. That's not the point of any of this, is to lay a framework for a future prescriptive right claim. Who cares? The perspective is, as quickly as we can, let's implement solutions that will ensure everybody's access to a reliable water supply. We're golden if we get there. Financing is a big piece, and our accuracy of our science is a critical piece to this. And
I'm keeping you on track.
Yeah, no,
I don't want to lose everybody. All my members are here, and I don't want to believe in news.
Yeah. So we talked about the submittals that are going to be made to the court, what that's going to look like. Rob has already talked about the programmatic projects. He's gone through this. I'm telling you, I don't know how to press buttons and things like demonstrate. Oh, my goodness. Basin Management Committee, we've talked about it. It is the CSD, Golden State, County, and S&T. We may get the Joint Powers Agreement. We're not there yet. Whether it's a Joint Powers Agreement or not, it will be subject to the government code provisions of the Brown Act.
Could you go back where we can see that? Because it just said it was authorized in excess powers to obtain funds, but it said it couldn't obtain funds.
Authorized to exercise powers to then. So I don't know how to say this in different words, John, because I'm somehow not connecting. And maybe the words are poorly crafted in the stipulation. There is no way a property tax assessment can be imposed by the Basin Management Committee, the county, the flood control district, any public entity. There is no way it can be done without going through a Prop 218 process. Whether it's done under SGMA or done under the stipulation, the court cannot authorize the Basin Management Committee to sidestep any of those things.
So if the language of the stipulation... Property tax funds.
I'm sorry?
When you say obtain funds, really you're just talking property tax, not about going to operating.
No, it could be rates, it could be...
Well, and so if it's rates on our customers, there is separately Prop 218 process for LOCSD, a PUC process for Golden State, and a private shareholder process for S&T Mutual. The county runs the recycled water plant, so it's a little bit different beast. All of those entities, the court cannot usurp or constrain their separate integrity through any budgeting mechanism. So if the stipulation uses language that implies that that might occur, poor draft, it cannot be done. Okay?
One question.
Just a quick question, because I don't want to get asked this all day. You show who the members are, and you show the pools as also being private wells and agricultural wells, but there's nowhere on your members that we're represented at all.
That's correct, because you're not party to the lawsuit. You will be included. You will be included in the same way that the County Board of Supervisors holds its public meetings. There will be an agenda for every Basin Management Committee. The public will be invited. Input will be received. And the fundamental integrity of the stipulation is we can't do anything that says, I don't know if you want a private well, but we can't tell you.
Of course, there are going to be.
Well, no, there are people here that don't own wells, so it's not a force.
Okay, but if I go to the outset, that for a lot of years, the water purveyors have worked behind closed doors without the input of people in this room, other people will be affected. Putting together a basin plan, which is quite long, everybody's read it. By the time we get to these late hour discussions, nobody's input has been available except for the water purveyors. That's the problem with this process.
And your notice that went out said that there was public input, but none of us even knew that you needed to put in public input.
So through the 11 years we've had a draft basin plan that was really a horrible question that was out in the public, was peer reviewed by entity. As I understand it, that was representative of the community as opposed to the entity hired by the public water providers. I
can assure you, until a week ago, I had the wildest idea of any park. I've never seen those. Yeah. Or have lots of other people who
have not. And that's unfortunate.
That is not just unfortunate, it's the flaw in the procedure, which has to be fixed.
Let me just say the Basin Management Plan has been out and available to the public for a couple of years, and there have been hearings at the LOCSD and at the Board of Supervisors. The reason we couldn't send a notice out to everyone prior to this last week or so is because we didn't have a stipulated judgment to bring the plan to the court. It was only when the parties could agree on what a stipulated judgment looked like that we could then put that up on the website and send everyone a notice and say, go listen.
The county can send that notice out. Could have sent that notice out 11 years ago.
What was the process?
We aren't asking you to say, we've got a basin plan, we'll approve it. We're asking you to let those people have an interest, participate in the development of the basin plan.
That's why, totally different. If you will, the basin plan was rolled out both at the LOCSD and at the Board of Supervisors on more than one occasion, and it's been at least 2 years since that happened. So there have been presentations of this thing. The notice that the board and these purveyors have been involved in this litigation has been going on for a long time. It hasn't been happening to be a secret. The fact that it's been going on has been well known, I think.
Why did you notice people something that doesn't affect them?
We noticed people because we wanted to make sure that anyone who thought they might be affected would be out, have a chance to look at what we were doing. That's why we put it up on the website. And like I said, the reason the notice went out when it did was we just didn't have a stipulated judgment until about a month ago. So,
and we've talked about this. The basin plan, so get the level of angst and frustration, and I can't diffuse it. I can't undo what's happened to get us here. All I can tell you is we're anxious to move forward, and we believe the plan has integrity. But it won't be implemented overnight. And will there be opportunity to say, you know what, turn right a little bit, turn left a little bit, massage it here? Will there be opportunity for that? Absolutely. This is not the end of the story. It's really just the point.
Okay, I'm going to terminate yours presentation. Supervisor Gibson, final thoughts, and then you all are willing to stay. Again, I have nothing here until 4:30. Find out if you need more information.
Thank you all. Thank you all for coming. And let me say I understand your frustration. I understand your concerns. There's a lot of things that have changed in the last year and a half at the state level. There's a lot of work been going on that may not have been completely obvious to a lot of you. Let me just frame it this way. We have a groundwater basin that's in serious trouble, and we have an obligation to fix it. We have been working for way too long on this litigation to get that done, and in that time comes the umbrella of the state that is now very much aligned with what we have been trying to do for a very long time. In the matter of dealing with balancing a groundwater basin, we are all in this together, and we are seeking the best possible equity. As I look at what we've done, I echo what Rob has said and what Rob Saperstein has said, Miller and Rob Saperstein, in terms of using the best science available to understand the dynamics of the basin and trying to come up with a legal framework that has almost no effect on private well owners. That we said it a couple of different ways, but the structure of solving this problem based on the technical seems to be able to, we have concluded that we can take the private well owners, ag and domestic, and impose very little in the way of change on that group. Now, I understand that having seen this roll out and hearing a court date coming up can cause a lot of concern. Please know that I remain available as the supervisor of your district to answer your questions, and I'm happy to sit down and talk with anybody who's interested, and I already have with a whole bunch of people. As your supervisor, as your representative, and as the person from the county who's been most involved in this, I believe that this is a fair and reasonable way to proceed going forward. The reality is that curing an overdrafted groundwater basin is a very difficult task. And I think we have gotten a proposal up that, as it is refined and then implemented, will do the job as best as it can be done. So, again, I'm going to leave a few of my cards on the table. Any of you who are interested are welcome to come contact me directly through my office. I continue to hold office hours in Los Osos on the fourth Thursday of every month, 4 o'clock at Sea Pines. I'm happy to meet with you as I'm available. So appreciate, want to thank all of our staff and other members who have participated in this, and hope that you found this useful and thank you. And thanks to the Farm Bureau for sending this.
If you need copies of any of the PowerPoint of Carolyn or Rob, share that with us. We would be happy to pass them along. All I need is a legible email address, and I have a sheet in the back. Otherwise, stay here, talk amongst yourselves. A few people will be able to remain and answer questions. Thank you all.